Welcome to Cross the Line Sports. My name is Carlos Smith, and I have a very special guest with me today. She is the general manager here of Baptist Health Iceplex here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Miss Melissa Fitzgerald. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking the time to sit with me. Like I said, it's been a great process. The past couple of 24 hours have been pretty busy for me. I do some work with the Charlotte Hornets, so I drove up to Charlotte last night, covered the game, and then I had a 5 a.m. flight just to be here. So been pretty busy, but I love what I do, and I'm thankful that you all invited me to come have a conversation with you.
Welcome.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, like I was saying before, you know, just driving in and just seeing so many people come out to the Ice Plate venue, how does that feel to have, like, the community and the support of everyone coming out to support the team and this the venue?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, that's really the crux of the public-private partnership that we have with the city of Fort Lauderdale. This is supposed to be a community gem, a community resource, and so actually having the community pouring through the doors and enjoying themselves is amazing.
You know, a lot of times, like, the fans, they don't see everything that goes on, like, behind the scenes, as far as, like, even with the athletes or even just running a business or just putting, like, a festival like this together. What was that process like to get everything going to make this day so successful?
You know, first of all, one of the things that's wonderful about being a part of an NHL franchise is that we've utilized resources up and down throughout the company to make sure that this was going to be a great event. What's going on outside was completely orchestrated by our folks at Ameren Arena, who know how to throw a great party. And inside the rink, this is really, we hope this is what we're going to be doing when we move forward. So this just feels great. Our staff is just able to do what we brought them here to do, which is to welcome a huge group of people in and make sure that we find things that they love to do and get them out on the ice or up at the snack bar or wherever they want to be.
How important is it to be so involved in the community and show your appreciation to them?
Oh my gosh, it's huge. Again, that's what we're here for. That's certainly why I was interested in becoming involved in this project. Mm-hmm. We're here to serve the community. We're here to make sure that we offer activities, a safe space to kids, to families. Mm-hmm. And so being able to offer out and serve the community is really just the crux of our business. Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when, especially where I'm from, when you hear about Florida, we think about, like, the nice weather, the nice warm weather, the beaches and palm trees. In general, for sports, is it hard to grow the business, like ice hockey, being in a warm weather state? How is it, you know, the process of, like, building that with being in a warm weather state with hockey?
You know, it's funny because, first of all, the places that people have been referring for many years to as non-traditional hockey markets are maybe not so non-traditional anymore. And I look at that with the Panthers and think, you know, the Panthers are so entrenched in the community. People know about ice hockey here. There also are a lot of people who come here, who move here from New York and from Canada and from Boston and all these very hockey-centric places. There's still a little bit more work to get people to think about ice when there's a beach right down the street.
Right.
But the beauty of it is that once you get people in through the door, the retention rate is huge in places like Southeast Florida.
I think that's what makes it so unique because, like I said, when you think about, like, an ice sport, you would think about something maybe like up north because it's so cold. But being out here in the warm weather, it makes you stand out a little bit more because it's so unique. So how do you view, like, being in this market? You know, of course, you have football, you have basketball, you have baseball. How do you view hockey? And of course, you still want it to grow, but how do you view hockey in that realm of all those sports?
So of course, I think hockey is, like, the best sport of them all. But hockey offer something up that is so uniquely team-oriented. There are other sports that are also great as real team sports, but hockey is just, it's fast-paced, and you really win and lose as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kinds of life skills that it teaches kids who play, it goes so far beyond the activity for that day.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, I think once people get involved, they stay involved because they see that value.
I know. I saw what you did. You had a lot of experience in hockey out in San Jose. Am I correct?
Yes.
Was there like a big adjustment going from California to doing being in hockey in California to out here in Florida? Was there like a big adjustment? But of course, I've been to the only two places I've been to out in California. I've been to Oakland and I've been to Los Angeles, and they're pretty warm weather areas as well. Was there like a big adjustment as far as like a culture shock of like how hockey is looked at out in California as opposed to here in Florida?
There are a lot of similarities. But again, I think that the Panthers identity here is so much bigger in the scope of the other sports here than I'm used to in other warm weather climates.
Mm-hmm.
The Sharks were beloved in San Jose. But the Panthers are Broward County's team and really Southeast Florida's team. And so getting here, the first thing I noticed is how many people had a Panthers something, a logo or a piece of clothing or something as I was just driving or walking around town, not just in Fort Lauderdale, but across the area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's different. And really gives us an advantage when we're trying to reach out.
Being in the community, I saw that you developed youth hockey programs in the past as well. How important is it? Because when I sit down with a lot of entrepreneurs and some athletes as well, but in the realm of entrepreneurship, I noticed that a lot of them, once they were exposed to entrepreneurship early, like whether they had family members or somebody that they know that was an entrepreneur, that they tended to, go that route and they continue to pursue entrepreneurship. So would you say it's important to get the youth involved in hockey early just to get them that exposure to maybe, and once they get exposed to it, maybe that's something they grow up to, to stick with hockey and just love it and go out as whether they want to play it or just continue to watch it?
Look, I'd love for everybody to bring their kids out when they're 3 or 4 years old and be lifelong mm-hmm. hockey participants and fans. But the reality is, again, when you talk about a warm weather climate, it's not as unusual in a place like Southeast Florida for kids to come out when they're 8 or 12 or 17, and even to have adults come out and say, hey, I never tried this. I'd like to learn mm-hmm. how to play. And in each case, it's really common for them to end up developing a love of the sport and sticking with it. Mm-hmm. The uniqueness about hockey is you can keep playing until you're 80 or 90 if you want to.
Right.
And so I don't think that I've seen that it's a deterrent for children and for adults who come in later.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in all sports, people in this community have their kids involved in 5 or 6 different sports, along with piano lessons and, everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say the biggest challenge is making sure that we get people to commit the time.
Right.
You know, so the earlier we get them, the more we get slotted in right away.
Absolutely. When you think back on your journey, do you remember when you were first exposed to hockey, and like what made you, love it and stick with it as well?
So I, my grandmother took a very incriminating picture of me when I was almost 2 years old at Christmas when I got my first pair of skates. And
mm-hmm.
it was incriminating because I was told I had to take a bath before I could put my new skates on. And I took a bath and I put my skates on first. But ice was always a part of, it was a winter activity for us,
mm-hmm.
but skating, hockey, socializing on the ice, it was something that you could do outside and do with your friends. So it's always been a very important part of mm-hmm. my life.
And I saw also where you helped develop a hockey program for girls. Is hockey big for young women as well, like women in general?
So girls hockey is the fastest growing segment for USA Hockey right now. So it is definitely an evolving and a growing sport. And so it's exciting for us here to be able to have dedicated ice to grow a girls program, because the girls are out there. They want to play. Usually the biggest problem is that there's not ice left at the end of the day after all of the other co-ed programs and other ice sports activities. So, I think it's an amazing sport for girls in the same way that it is for boys.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunities are probably even greater for girls to be able to move on who have the talent and are motivated to be able to play in college. And now with the PWHL, the big storylines have been that their arena is the size of Amarant Arena, which is a big arena mm-hmm. for hockey, that are being filled here and there, not every night, but here and there for women's hockey games.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an amazing moment in time
right.
to get girls in hockey.
I don't want to get too far off the subject, but when you look at what's going on with women basketball right now, for me, I'm rooting for the Gamecocks since I'm from South Carolina, so that's who I'm rooting for. But when you look at what's going on with just the game of women basketball, what impact do you think that's going to have not only on just their sport, but also just all sports for women because of like the attention that has been brought to it?
Yeah, I'm assuming you watched the games last night.
I was actually covering the Hornets, so I missed the games, but I was keeping up
good.
With it on my phone. But our girls are really good.
Yeah. I think one of the critical pieces, it speaks to girls' sports. It speaks to sports when it comes to children who may come from communities or cultures that aren't typically served by particular sports. Having role models,
mm-hmm.
being able to feel like I can be me and I can grow up to do this is mm-hmm. huge. When you look at some of those basketball players and mm-hmm. go, oh yeah, I can be a great athlete and
right.
I can do it and I can be a woman.
Yeah, and I think it helps because, unfortunately some men always look at it like, well, she's a woman, women can't do certain things. Of course they're not physically as imposing as a man is, but when you see the skill set that they have, I think it's going to bring, like I said, I think it's going to bring attention not only to women's basketball, but to all sports. Because, like you said, once you see a female role model that's doing something, and you look at that person like, well, they can do it, then I feel like I can do the same thing as well.
Yeah.
And just having that exposure to it. For you, being in this, in sports, in a male-dominated industry, have you had to, go through certain pitfalls because, being in a male-dominated industry? Because we hear stories all the time of even female journalists, different things that they have to go through because they're in a male-dominated industry. Are there certain pitfalls as well that comes with it being in a position that you have as well?
I certainly have had my experiences through the years of having men tell me that, maybe I was in the wrong profession, but I think that was a long time ago for me. I have mm-hmm. felt very welcomed at what I do. I've appreciated the fact that I have been hired for things because someone believed that I was the right person for the job. I think women in general in any industry or in most industries are going to kind of come up against, again, it's sort of a cultural difference sometimes about the way that women approach things versus mm-hmm. the way that men approach things. And I like to think that I've gotten better through the years at staying within myself and honoring my style and how I think that I work best
mm-hmm.
and that maybe that helps to set an example for other women who are coming up through the industry that the way to succeed is to be you
mm-hmm.
and to show people that you're the right person for the job.
I think at times men can have an issue because you talk to lead and never to show a weakness, but I look at it as a woman being in an authoritative position is like women are, to me, I look at them as nurturers, so they always, know what's best at heart anyway, so it's nothing wrong with having a female. Even when I think about my mom, my daughter's mother, my grandmother, all of those women that are in my life, they always nurture and they help deal with certain tasks way better than I can. So when it comes to the kids are planning something, something's going on, I say, okay, just let me know. I'll be there. I got it. So I just look at them as from a standpoint of just women. They can do the things that men do when it comes to like running a business and just, you know, being nurturers and, you know, helping, you know, keep things smooth sailing. Because, you know, as men, you have your mind on a lot of different tasks. And sometimes as a man, your ego can get in the way. And women, like I said, I just look at them as like nurturers and they can help, you know, keep things smooth sailing.
Well, I think, you know, again, women come in all different sizes, shapes, and colors, too, right?
Absolutely.
And it's not uncommon to, you know, for women to have a challenge trying to stay in a lane in terms of, you know, they're not supposed to be too pushy. They're not right. supposed to be too soft. They're not supposed, you know, and again, like trying to define, like, hey, everybody who comes from a different place and a different experience in life comes in with their own strengths and weaknesses, and everybody has to find their way of leading and their way of finding their path through. And, you know, I think the more women that there are involved, the more that becomes apparent, you know, just as with men. Like, men come in with all sorts of different strengths and weaknesses, and you're trying to create a diverse community of, you know, on your team of people who think differently and approach things differently, so that you have a lot of different viewpoints at the table so that you can help the best ideas to rise to the top and move forward with them. And I think you do that by having a lot of different people who just come from a different point of view.
Absolutely. And that's what I was going to ask you, because you helped develop an NHL diversity task force, and, you know, just speaking on that is just how important diversity is, because you get a different perspective on that. But, well, how was that for you, you know, helping develop that task force, and just like you said, just, you know, so much the importance of the diversity?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, to be clear, the NHL, you know, developed that program, but mm-hmm. we were one of the first members of that program. So, you know, we all kind of grew together through that. But there are a lot of different reasons why diversity in hockey is really important. I mean, mm-hmm. first and foremost, anybody should be able to come in and participate in anything that they want to. But the NHL has identified the fact that their fan base moving forward into the future is going to look more diverse than what might have been traditionally true. If we want to stay relevant, if we want to continue to have a loyal fan base, we need to make sure that we are reaching out into the whole community. A lot of times mm-hmm. the challenge is that a community hockey rinks or community rinks exist in areas that might not reflect as much diversity in the community. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that excited me the most about this project is it's right in the middle of one of the most socioeconomically diverse communities in the mm-hmm. country. And having resources in the backyard of people who reflect that diversity means you have a much better chance of getting people involved. And then it goes right back to what we talked about earlier in the interview. You get people through the door, and we're going to hook them, and we're going to keep them here.
I'll never forget my sister. I was telling Veronica earlier, probably about 3-4 months ago, my sister, my baby sister, she went to the Carolina Hurricanes hockey game because she lived about an hour away from Raleigh. And when she went to the game, she said, when I talked to her on the phone, she said, "You got to go to a hockey game." She said, "Just the crowd and just the game." And then, of course, she said, "Of course, you see them out there fighting and stuff out there." She was like, "You got to go to a game." But for me, I never had anything against hockey. It was just, like you said, like, I never saw where we're from. Like, I'm from a very small town, and football and basketball are just dominant where I am. Especially, you know, we have the South Carolina Gamecocks, Clemson Tigers, so football and basketball, and mostly, and of course, you hear about baseball as well, so we never really hear about hockey as much. So that was something that opened me up to it. So, you know what, that hockey would definitely be something, being in the sports, that would be something else to experience as well. Because like you said, if you just so important to get that exposure to it, because once you get that exposure to it, then a lot of people gravitate towards it, and then they can do it as a hobby.
Yeah.
Because a lot, like with football, everybody can't play football. It's just such a physical sport. Like you said, like when you see the fans out here, they just, like, it's a hobby. They come out here and play hockey. Like, a lot of times you're not going to just throw on shoulder pads and just go outside and just tackle somebody. I just think it's just such a physical sport. But with hockey, like, having that exposure to it, I think you're going to have, like you said, get a lot of more people involved into it. I have a few more questions. Do you think there is a misperception when it comes to the sport of hockey?
Well, I think, yeah, you know, that the image that people, particularly like parents who are looking to choose a sport for their children, often think of hockey as being a dangerous sport or an overly aggressive sport. And statistically, when you read the research studies, actually hockey is actually quite a bit, it has quite a bit lower instance of injury than a lot of other sports. Mm-hmm. Like, I was looking at something this morning, like bicycling is like 10 times more injuries per year than hockey. And just trying to help parents to understand, again, that the real crux of hockey is that team orientation, just the camaraderie that comes of it, that kids can come into the sport and walk away and know how to deal with things in life better. Mm-hmm. You know, the first time that they work with somebody that they don't like, hopefully they learn from hockey that it's not about who you like and who you don't like on your team. That may matter in other ways, but it doesn't matter to the success of your team. The success of your team comes from trying to help everybody to be their best, and you are as good as the weakest player on your team, so everybody better work on making sure everybody is better. And those types of things, I don't think people understand until they become involved, like just how amazing the experience is in the life of a child.
Right. Do they teach those techniques early on? Like, are there certain techniques that they teach in hockey? Like I was going back to football again, they teach you how to, when you're making a tackle, you know, get your head across and the proper way to tackle. Does hockey do those? Is there certain things they teach as well when you first start playing? Like, is certain things, like the fundamentals of it?
Well, you know, the best hockey players, first of all, are going to be the best skaters. So when you talk about trying to get kids out when they're young, the younger you get them, the more that you can really truly make them believe that their biggest job is just to learn how to skate really well. So you get instructors out there with them to make sure that they understand that. And then from there, absolutely, it's just progressive techniques, first individual skills, and then those team skills, and trying to introduce each thing at an age-appropriate level. But the thing that I think sometimes in our like really uber competitive environment out in life right now that that people forget is that the most important thing for kids to learn to be great hockey players is how to read and react, how to actually think, how to be creative. And I think sometimes when people are worried about winning games or, you know, whatever, being competitive, that they don't give kids enough room. I think in most sports, that if kids are allowed to have some space to figure out what they think should happen next, and then be able to really go back and debrief about it afterward, that's what makes the next greatest player in a sport. It's not executing what someone else has done for years well, but figuring out a way to do it better or something different to do.
Thinking your way through it.
Yeah.
What would you say was something, you know, from hockey, or any sport in general, was something that you learned from that sport that helped you, you know, translate to life in general and in business?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about some of it. It's just growing up to be an adult who has an understanding that most situations that we are in life, at work, in social situations, we're in teams of one sort or another. And if you can really learn how to be successful within a team and how to make the team better, you're going to have an amazing leg up on life. I think also just things like, you know, we laugh sometimes about when a coach wants to yell at a referee because they think they made the wrong call. It's like you have to step back and think about it. What are you saying to all those kids on your bench? Like, are you trying to teach them how to work through something when something doesn't go your way and somebody else is in charge and you got to figure out what to do next? Or are you going to tell them to scream at the cop who stopped him for a ticket and see how well that works for getting the ticket reversed, right?
I don't do
it. Yeah.
Talking about team, how, just elaborate on your team and your staff about like how important they've been to you as far as like, you know, putting this festival together overall and just the daily things that you have to go through as a team. Just how important is your team that you have around you to make everything possible?
Oh, huge. You know, one of the things that's been thrilling here for me is that we've had sort of the best of the best come to us and want to come and get involved in this project. It's an exciting project and people see it. So we've had people from other NHL teams. We've had people from under other industries that really excel at what they do, who've wanted to become involved. And it was so exciting the first day that we opened, because I walked downstairs thinking, oh my gosh, okay, no one has had any experience with this building. We're just going to have to keep course correcting and adjusting through, you know, through really, I thought, the first several months of being here. And I walked down and everybody just had fallen into doing exactly what they should be doing and was having fun with it and was really excited and proud to be here. So today, everything that's going on in this building, this is the staff that put this together. And, you know, we've had several meetings about it and people contributing to what they thought would add to the best experience for welcoming people into the building. And the fact that I can sit here with you now and do this interview and not be running around downstairs worrying about whether everybody's okay.
Helps put you at ease.
It's amazing, you know, and I just, I feel so lucky to have that here.
And I can tell you just firsthand, and they didn't tell me to say this, but Chrissy and Veronica they've been amazing for me. With emails, making sure I had everything that I needed, any type of information. They responded as quick as possible, and they helped set all of this up. So you definitely have two people on your team right there that are amazing. They're doing a great job. So thank you to those young ladies as well for, you know, helping make this interview possible. When it comes to, you know, strategic partnerships, I was reading about it. What do you look for to make a partnership right with, as far as like for the team and in the community? Like, what are some things, like on a business tip, like what do you look for a strategic partnership?
You know, I think the most important thing is that there has to be you have to find people who share a common philosophy. It doesn't have to be a common philosophy about everything, but it has to be a common philosophy about the whatever point of interaction you're having. And from there, things blossom. I mean, the entirety of this project is a great example. I mean, the Panthers and the city of Fort Lauderdale wanted a facility that was going to offer out valuable resources out into the community. And from there, it was all a matter of talking about the fine points, you know, and we've ended up with something that's more exciting than anyone imagined. But what we're finding is that, you know, it used to be 10 or 20 years ago, sponsors wanted to slap their name on something. They wanted to come in and, you know, have their name on a building or on a board or whatever it is. And now a lot of people who want to invest money and put their name on it want their name to be on something that means something to them. So I'm finding a lot here, as I did in California, that as you have conversations, as you reach out and meet people and start to talk about, you know, they hear what we're doing and then they start talking about what they're doing, that it's so common to find out that there's a meeting point, there's something that we're both passionate about. And that we can provide some resources and they can provide some resources, and that maybe that combination can make something happen that might not be able to happen otherwise.
It just made me think about something. Would you say it's easier was it easier back then as opposed to now? Because, like you said, a lot of companies back then, you said they used to just want to slap their names on a building or something like that. But now, it's almost like you have to make sure, you know, it aligns with your purpose and what you're doing with your business, because now it's almost, in a sense, it's almost scary because it's the cancel culture, or if somebody doesn't agree with something, they're ready to, like, a quote-unquote cancel culture. So is it a little bit tougher now, like, making sure that a company aligns with your purpose, because people, to a certain extent, may get easily offended if you align your business with a certain brand?
You know, it's funny because it's been a conversation throughout the NHL, I think, about stories of, as people start to try to really reach out to a more diverse audience, to try to expand the fan base, that, you know, most people are in total alignment with that, and every once in a while you get someone who has a question about it. And it's really easy because the opportunity for growth and for expansion is so much larger than one business or, you know, one fan, whatever it is, and what may not rub the right way for them. Mm-hmm. And so I think, again, if you, as I think the Panthers do, really stay grounded in what's important to you, and you message that out, then you're going to get those businesses, those sponsors aligned mm-hmm. with you, who are going to want to move forward.
If you can, just touch on it as much as you can, because I know it's like a sticky situation, and not to get too political, I know some things have been passed down here to where I saw the University of Florida, you know, disbanded there, or they are looking into disbanding the DEI department. But how does that impact business, as far as, like, you know, when you're pushing for diversity and something like that happens, like laws like that are passed, like, how does that make things, just touch on as much as you can, like, does that make it a little bit tougher for you as well, being in that realm with things like that being passed?
I could say, really simply, as long as we're doing what we do and we're making sure that we're including everybody in the community, it makes me feel like we're helping to contribute. If mm-hmm. If there are some things, if there are some offerings that may not be available, you know, certainly in Fort Lauderdale, the conversation is vibrant and the resources are vibrant for the conversation about diversity and equity and inclusion at NHL level and within the NHL franchises. The directives and the goals and the conversation are really vibrant. The NHL has a diversity team that's very active. So for us, I guess for me, I just feel like, you know, I do what I can to contribute right. in the ways that make me feel like I'm honoring my values. Mm-hmm. And what a great opportunity here.
I remember a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed a lady. She does they help businesses get grants, and they have up in Asheville, North Carolina, it's called a Black Wall Street. And one of the things that she made a unique point about was, she was saying sometimes people, when they hear about diversity, they think it's only pertaining to Black people. But the point that she made was, diversity is for everybody, not just one race. It's for multiple backgrounds, or no matter your gender or anything. She said diversity is for everybody, men and women, no matter what, no matter your background. So that was a unique point that I think sometimes people may get caught up on, and that was something that she also made me think about, because she was like, it's for everybody, it's not just for, you know, for Black people. So that was an important point to put out there as well. My final two questions, what do you see for the future of ice sports overall?
Well, it continues to grow. Again, I think there will always be a need and a place for it. Mm-hmm. You know, as I said, in this area, I expect that youth ice hockey is going to be the most popular sport in Fort Lauderdale mm-hmm. in short order. There are also a lot of other ice sports. There's figure skating. There's ice speed skating and ice dancing. We have curling circles over on the North Rink and plan to offer that up as something that people can come in who can't skate, who or don't want to skate, whatever, who don't necessarily feel like they're athletes, but they can come in and experience the ice and, you know, and have fun and, again, team build. But, you know, I don't know. I've been on the planet a few years, and ice hockey hasn't gone anywhere except up, and I expect that it'll continue to do so.
I would love to try. You know, I've never, like, I've learned to, you know, attack some of my fears. The first time I ever been on a plane, I was 28 years old. It was 4 years ago. And the first time I ever got on a plane, I flew to Jacksonville, Florida. So once I got on the plane, I was like, it's not as bad as I thought it would be. So looking at ice skating, I was like, I would love to try. Like, I skate regular roller skates, and I'm not that great. But ice skating, is it kind of similar in a way? I mean, I know you don't have the...
To roller skating?
Yeah, to roller skating. Mm-hmm.
It's more similar to roller blading, right? You have one blade. But there's sort of a fundamental difference between roller skating or roller blading and ice hockey or ice skating, which is that you're working against friction to try to move yourself when you're out on a sidewalk. And you're actually trying to create friction to move yourself when you're on ice. So, but having said that, people who rollerblade usually come out on the ice and they kill it until they try to stop. And then they just slam into the wall. But we can teach them that part.
Yeah, right. Is there a particular age group that you see so far? I'm sorry, I know just something else came to my mind. Is there a particular age group that you see that tends to gravitate more towards ice skating? I mean, hockey?
Again, it's all over the place. I expect that we're probably, from what we're hearing so far, going to have a lot of adults in the community who now have an ice arena in their backyard, who want to know how they can learn how to play ice hockey. That was true in California, that we had a lot of adults who came out and formed teams and hopped on leagues as adult teams. So I do expect that we're going to get people of all ages and all ability levels. We've got some people who live in the community, a lot of them who've come up to us as we were in the construction phase saying, oh yeah, I played hockey until I moved to Florida, and then I stopped thinking about it because there wasn't an ice arena in the neighborhood. Maybe I'll come out, you know. So we expect we're going to have a lot of people coming out again who haven't been out on the ice for a while.
Absolutely. And my last and final question, I like to ask entrepreneurs this whenever I'm traveling and travel across the country, and we sit down and have conversations. So towards the end, I love to ask them, like, if you had some advice to give someone that wants to get into the sports industry. Such as yourself, or just go after their dreams in general. Like, what advice would you give them?
You know, just to go for it, for one thing. One of the pieces of advice that women are given all the time is that men will apply for a job when they read the description of what kind of experience they're supposed to have. And if they hit about 50 or 60% of it, they'll apply for that job. And women will look at the same list sometimes and go, oh, I don't have that one out of 20 things, so I'm not qualified for this job. I just think that people need to follow their dreams. They need to network. A lot of my opportunities have come just from people that I've known who it wouldn't have occurred to me that they were going to be someone to help me to, you know, take another step in my path, but they were. You know, find people like me. Find people that you know in the community who are doing what you'd like to be doing, and ask them how they got there, and ask them whether or not there are any opportunities to get involved on any level, and don't be afraid to roll your sleeves up and do something that isn't exactly what you want to do, but gets your foot in the door in the industry or in the area that you want to be in.
Absolutely. It's an entrepreneur that I listen to a lot. His name is Ed Mylett, and one of the things he said was, you know, start before you're ready. And sometimes, you know, even if you're not sure quite what you're doing, once you get into that space, once you get a foot in that space, you can kind of figure it out. It's almost like I think about it when it comes to like rookies in any sport when they go to turn pro. When they first turn pro, they don't really know what they're doing, but as they keep playing and the season goes along, then they start figuring out, and then maybe by year two or year three, then they get better and better as they progress because they step into their space, not necessarily not when they're ready, but as they went along, then they start figuring things out. And it was the same thing for me when I started, you know, covering sports. I never forget my mentor, Coach Cox, he took me to a high school football game with him, and I was thinking I was just going to sit back and just watch him and his partner do color commentary, but next thing I know, he threw me a headset, and here I am just talking about football on the fly. And I'll never forget, one of the life-changing things for me was in 2014, my senior year at USC Upstate, and we were headed to a football game, and he said, I'm getting ready to go cover ACC Media Day, and then we'll go cover the Charlotte Hornets. And he said, do you want to go with me? And I said, sure, I'll go. So that was the first time that I ever saw, like, we checked into the hotel for media day, and I saw Coach K from Duke. I saw Coach Roy Williams, Rick Pitino when he was at Louisville, Coach Hamilton. And then after that, we went to the Hornets game, and after the Hornets won the game, they played the Milwaukee Bucks. We're walking down the hallway, and I'm walking this way, and next thing, Michael Jordan comes the other way. So I look like, I was starstruck. I was like, man, this is Michael Jordan. But once I got that exposure to it, and I saw the sign that was sitting in the media section that says the Charlotte Hornets welcome Carlos Smith, it just, that's when everything, the ball started rolling for me, and it was just a life-changing experience. And at that moment, I was 22 years old. I wasn't quite ready, but my Coach Cox gave me the opportunity, and once I stepped into that space, it was just, it was life changing. So then, ever since then, I just kept on going. So that's why I would tell people, and just start when you're ready. And like I said, just whatever you're passionate about, just go after that dream. And it's never going to be a perfect time either, because if you think it is, it's time is going to just pass you by. So it's never going to be a perfect time to do what you want to do.
That's right.
So, Miss Fitzgerald, I want to thank you for your time. I know you have to get back to the festival. Before we get out of here, can you tell everyone how they can, you know, find the Iceplex venue and some of the hours that you guys provide as well?
Absolutely. You can go to ftlwarmemorial.com. That's our website, and look and see what's up from it, you know, on any given day. We've got activities that you can register for. We have some open practices to come view the team. We're going to have a fabulous restaurant, full-service restaurant, that's going to be opening a little later in the month, so you can check it out and see what you'd like to come and participate in. And, you know, you can also just stop by. We're right in Holiday Park, which is just a beautiful place to come, just to come walk in the park, right? And come see us. We'd love to meet people. We'd love to answer any questions that they have and see what we can do to find them something that they can do to enjoy, even if it's just to go over into our Pantherland store and get a Panthers t-shirt to cheer the team on into playoffs.
Absolutely. And I'm sure people from back home, for us, they will love, they can't wait to get down this way as well, because back home right now, it's probably about, been down like the 40s. So, you know, hopping off a plane and stepping into this warm 70, 80 degree weather, they will love something like this as well.
Yeah.
But it's been a great experience. I want to thank you so much for taking the time. And I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. And I'm looking forward to, you know, enjoying the festivities that you've all put together. So hopefully everyone enjoyed this episode of Cross the Line Sports. Till next time, keep chasing your dreams. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.